Coming to you live from the Cultural Hall, this is the Mormon News Report for the week of January 15th, 2018. We are your weekly dose of Mormonism.
With, frankly, everyone, an unhealthy dose of snark that may or may not be contagious. You may or may not want to steer clear of this episode. And just for safekeeping, you might want to have some hand sanitizer at the ready in case whatever I'm getting over is communicable. So if you hear some random mutes and dropouts, it's probably because I'm hacking up a lung over here. So Brian, be careful. You might get sick with this. I think we were talking earlier that apparently coughing is now contagious because now you're worried that you're going to start coughing. But just be aware, it's going to be one of those shows, everybody.
You've had a rough go of it these last few days, haven't you?
I'm not kidding you when I say I spent three straight days like in bed and all I could do was wake up long enough to take Theraflu, go back to sleep. I didn't eat anything for almost 3 days. I only drank Gatorade. And then apparently today I'm feeling better and my body said, hey, remember that whole not eating for 3 days thing? Let's eat 3 days worth of food all in one day. So been just a heck of a weekend for me.
So it was almost like a second holiday for you, another Christmas without the presents.
I mean, if you know, you had some of the joyousness of Christmas.
You're like, no, I was just hungry. You know, but really, I'm going to blame this on Geraldine Hasselpool, who was our guest last week, because, you know, she came on the show just barely getting over the flu. And I think somehow it came through the interwebs and got to you. So I apologize for that.
I mean, aren't we all at a point where anything that goes wrong, we can always blame it on Geraldine, because somehow, some way you'll get back to her.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Well, listen, I'm sorry to hear that you're not feeling well, but I really do appreciate that you're willing to do the show again this week. We don't have a guest this week. Remember we talked about earlier last week, we said, you know, if we have a guest, great. If we don't, then, you know, we're just gonna roll with it. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a couple book reviews this week of some books that that crossed our paths. And next week, we will have a guest. We're going to have Adam Miller on next week. So stay tuned for that.
Very smart, Adam. But Brian, if I could really quickly about the books, here's the thing. They're not going to be long, drawn out academic book reviews. These are going to be quick hit book reviews where it's like, ah, you know what? I've seen that out there. Should I look into it? Is it going to be interesting? I think we might have a couple that might pique your interest or if anything might entertain you a little bit.
Yeah. Depending upon what types of things that you enjoy. I think that we got some good books for you to take a look at. All right. So let's get to the question from last week. We actually kind of, and it was my fault. I'll take the blame for this. We threw out a question during the recording, and then afterwards I was like, I want a different question. And so I threw a different question up on Facebook. So I think I might have confused everybody because we didn't really get a lot of feedback from this one. But the first question we threw out during the show was, what do you think Monson's legacy is going to be? What do you think Nelson's legacy will be after his tenure? And then the second question that I threw on our Facebook page was, what were your thoughts on the New York Times obituary? And for that, the only thing that we really got was a sad face, if I recall.
Which, it's 2018, Brian. That should be enough for people to, yeah, okay, I get it. I'm with it, you know?
Yeah, I guess enough said, right? I mean, that's really all that you need to say. It's like hieroglyphics now.
Yeah, and really, Brian, if you were hip to the way that the kids are talking these days, that shouldn't be that much of an issue. Like, oh, I get it. Yep, no words are needed. I'm totally with you. Sad face. Little tear down the right cheek. We're good. Okay,
fair enough. So our response that we got last week to our question, what were your thoughts on the New York Times obituary was sad face.
Sad face, single tear. Very important. It's a single tear.
That's right. It was a single tear too. You're right. Yeah. Not the two tears weeping down. It was a single tear. All right. Yeah. But we did get a voicemail.
Hey, we got a voicemail. I threw the number out. Again, it's 801-987-0192. And Brian, let's go ahead and give a listen to our voicemail. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This is Rob calling all the way from Zion. Yes, Utah. I want to thank you guys for your review of President Monson and all the obituaries and how you could do it in just your Mormon newsy way. I want to reflect on President Monson myself. Loved his stories, loved his cadence, loved what he represented as a service-oriented apostle. And I just want to leave you with one question, guys, if you'll ponder. I know you guys like to throw shade on Mr. John DeLynn. Would you ever bring him on your podcast? even a better question. Do you think he even listens to your podcast? Do you think he even cares? You guys are doing great. Thanks for letting me listen. Bye-bye.
So we got three questions there to deal with.
Yeah,
Would we ever listen to John or invite John DeLynn on the show? Yeah. Number one. Number two, do we think John DeLynn listens to our show? And then number three, do we think he even cares? Those are three very separate questions because you can listen to something and not care about it, right? I mean, both you and I hate listening to stuff all the time.
I'm so guilty of that. And you'll know when I'm hate listening to something, Brian, because I'm usually peppering you with text messages just with all my thoughts.
Like, I can't believe that they said this.
Let's get the uncomfortable question out of the way first. Brian, do you want me to answer the uncomfortable question or do you want to do it?
We may have different answers, so I don't know.
Would we invite John DeLynn on the show? I'll go ahead and put my name out there. Personally, I don't want John DeLynn on the show. I don't care for him. I don't care for the things that he represents. I don't care for how he does certain things. I don't care for how he carries himself. So no, I don't think that I would want him on the show, but that is just my opinion, and the show is not a monopoly. It is a biopoly. It's the biopoly.
So you're saying two people get a choice, say in this?
Yep.
All right. So here, I'm going to say that I have the same rule with him as we did with the guys from Mormon Leaks, that if he produced something that was newsworthy and we called him out by name on it and he felt like he had a chance, if we felt like it would be only the right thing for him to respond, then I may let him do that. I think that would be the appropriate thing to do. But would we have him on just as a, hey, you're a cool guy, let's just chit chat? I don't think that it would serve the purposes of our show.
I'm with you on that. Okay, so next question. Do you think he listens to the show? I think he does.
I think he does?
I think maybe it's a one-off, and I think someone might tip him off, hey, they mentioned you here.
Right.
I think maybe that's what it is. I don't think he's an active subscriber. He's definitely not a Patreon subscriber, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, I thought he was one of our secretly named Patreon subscribers.
He is not one of the secretly named Patreon generous benefactors. That is not Mr. DeLynn, but... I think he listens. Maybe he might have gotten word of some of the things I said last week, and that's maybe why he listened, but that's about it.
Well, he'll probably listen this week since we're bringing him up. And then does he care? I don't know. I don't think so.
He's we just go in very different paths from each other, and it is what it is.
Yeah. Now, look, I'm going to say this. John and I get along. When I see him in public, you know, when we're together at, conferences or in events, we always shake hands. We're always, glad to see each other. I've been in several social situations with him. So this is nothing. I'm not trying to deride him as a person or his character, but we do definitely diverge in our paths as far as what we're trying to do with this show and what he has done very successfully with his show.
And I'll say this, if I was ever in a situation, I guess that's the benefit of being in a place like Michigan where I'm not anywhere around the happening social circles that you seem to hang out in, Brian. But if I was ever in a social situation, I would not have a problem being cordial. I'm not going to be a jerk. That's just not who I am. I'm cranky, but I'm not a jerk. But would we ever, go out and get drinks together? Probably not.
You're probably not going to go on one of his cruises.
No, I am not, Brian.
Everybody wants to see you in Bermuda shorts.
Almost got me there.
Everybody wants to see you in a pair of Bermudas, Brant. Bermudas with Brant. That's a new thing.
There's international laws and, you know, war crime magistrates and situations that have been set up. That's not happening.
Let's get on with the news. We have a lot to pound out this week.
Holy moly. This is a really big week. So here's what we're going to do, everybody. We've got a lot of stuff to get into. We're going to do some quick hits first, and then we'll get into the deep dive with a couple of things that are going on with the passing of LDS Church President Thomas Monson and the succession that will happen on Tuesday, which we'll get into with President-elect, President Russell Nelson. So here's something that happened on Sunday night. Last Sunday night, the 2018 Golden Globes happened, and many females at the Golden Globes were dressed in very conservative black attire, and they were protesting the culture of sexual harassment that had long defined Hollywood. Sounds good, made news. Brian, I think it's something that you and I would say that was a very profound statement to see them make. Awesome. Let's go to Monday, January 8th. LDS Living Magazine had a post titled Modest Dresses from the 2018 Golden Globes with the following. This year's Golden Globe saw an unprecedented number of celebrities sporting modest dresses. While we understand modesty encompasses so much more than merely what you wear, we wanted to compile a list of some of the stunning modest dresses from the red carpet to provide inspiration and demonstrate that style does not have to jeopardize modesty to be fashionable. Brian, I will say this. This is one of those stories where Mormons are going to mourn, and Jana Reese had quite a few strong words. Here's what she said. You think? Did it occur to anyone working on this story that there was a reason for that, the black modest dresses that they were wearing? Celebrities were, quote, sporting modest dresses, end quote, as a form of protest. The fact that they were almost all wearing black, which is not even mentioned in the LDS Living Roundup, could be regarded as a clue because they're sick of women's bodies being objectified, judged, and treated as property. Because Me Too is true of too many women. So Mormons respond by dishing out more of the same, objectifying and judging women's bodies and perpetuating the lie that women exist for purposes of ornamentation. As if critiquing women's attire is a Mormon right. As if we are divinely appointed to praise women whose fashion choices conform with our own narrow and culturally conditioned standards. These were not stunning modest dresses from the red carpet, end quote. They were intentionally somber dresses that were selected to make a point.
She went after them.
A point LDS Living could not have been thicker about missing. And Brian, this is when Jana's at her. When Jana gets a little bee in her bonnet on some of these things, she's at her best. Because I was sitting here going, you are exactly right. Like, what is it with Mormons? And I don't mean this to act like I'm different from other Mormons, but what is it about members of the LDS Church who are just so desperate to have somebody to be able to say, please pay attention to me or justify me or give me something to look to so that I can feel comfortable about what I'm wearing, that we have to sit there and go, oh, see, those celebrities there are modest. So that means we can all be modest and it's okay. How about you just like, you do you and I'm going to do me and we'll be fine with that. Here's the kicker though. Late on January 9th, LDS Living updated his website to reflect the actual reason these women were wearing the dresses as a solidarity movement with hashtag Time's Up, a movement protesting sexual harassment, assault, or abuse in the workplace. However, this is what Jana includes. The magazine has since revised its copy without explaining that it had done so. So you know what they did? Oh, wait a minute. People are starting to catch on to this. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go ahead and slip this in there without including an editor's note that we made a mistake, and everything will be fine. And thank goodness that Jana took a screenshot of what originally happened so that people could see what was going on. Brian, I get this. Look, I am a father of daughters, and this is probably going to be something that we're going to have to deal with as my daughters get older, this whole concept of modesty within the LDS Church and the way that some prominent women, whether it's in Hollywood or wherever, dress, and how does that reconcile with LDS beliefs and things like that. I'm not prepared to get into that discussion, all right? Look, my kid's just happy to be wearing my little pony pajamas, all right? So I'm not worried about that kind of stuff. But I will say this. It is so incredibly frustrating that we are so desperate to almost feel like there's a justification out there instead of just saying, okay, this was a thing and it happened and look, I really don't care what celebrities are wearing. Maybe it's because I'm a dude. Like, is that why it's just not ringing true to me at all? But I was just reading this going, what is going on? Like, why is this, who cares? Why does this matter other than LDS Living is just so desperate to get a few more clicks, to get a few more likes, to get a few more retweets with other people saying, look at how great they are. Isn't this amazing? I mean, am I completely off base here?
Well, I mean, so the thing is, I hate to say it, but we can't really expect much more from LDS Living because they're not, I mean, they're really not a social commentary, you know, news outlet. I mean, they're really a marketing piece for Deseret Book, right? I mean, the whole point of LDS Living is to get a huge subscriber base, people reading their little clickbaity, articles. And sometimes they're good. I mean, it's, you know, they had an article from Adam Miller this last week that was actually a really, you know, good article about doubt and faith and things like that. So it's not like they're all, you know, garbage, but the bottom line is with LDS Living is that the sole reason that they exist is to keep people engaged in their brand so that they can pitch you Deseret Book stuff. That's why they exist. So it doesn't surprise me when they come up with shallow nonsense stuff like this, where they're just like, where they completely miss the point of why these women were dressed this way. And they throw out this modest is hottest crap on us. And like, you know, oh, you know, yeah, like you said, let's validate our you know, views on our rhetoric on modesty by looking at what these celebrities are wearing, which is just disgraceful. And it's also, in my opinion, harmful to the message that they were really trying to put out, which is, you know, again, it's lifting up this Me Too movement and saying it's, you know, the time's up, right? Time's up for men to you know, for getting away with his behavior in public. Now, here's the deal. I'm actually not mad at LDS Living for doing this.
Oh boy. Okay. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I'm not mad at them for doing this. It comes down to disappointment, right? But I'm not angry because I know what they're about.
So it's more of a, I knew what you were when I picked you up. So it's not
right. My expectations for LDS Living is not the same as my expectations for the Boston Globe or for the Washington Post or for the New York Times, or even for that matter, the Deseret News, although the Deseret News is just like barely above it. In my opinion, in a lot of their pieces, but you know, I don't expect really quality reporting from LDS Living. But on the other hand, when they do,
so I understand, you are not expecting to be thoroughly and deeply intellectually stimulated and engaged through LDS Living, because Brian, if you're not, you are missing out on something very, very choice in your life.
No, that's why I listen to the Mormon News Report, Brian.
There we go. That's brilliant.
At any rate, I'm not mad at them for this, but I'm also glad that Jana picked up the story and said, look, this is the stupid stuff that we do. I think it's hilarious that they went in and kind of snuck in a little bit of a correction to the article without making note of it, because it was like, oops, okay. They got a little bit of mud in their face, and I love that it just kind of went in and quietly corrected it. But that's not the first time that we've seen that. Do you remember that story of the kid who was left in what canyon was it?
Bryce National Canyon.
Yeah, Bryce National Canyon. And then his grandparents ended up picking him up and talking him into going on his mission. And so LDS Living puts out this this article on this. You recall this. We covered this story. And then everybody blew up over it, saying, this is not a faith-promoting story. This is an awful story of, you know, parental abandonment and abuse, borderline abuse. And then they like quickly flipped it and said, oh, no, we'll just make it an inspiring story about how grandpa encouraged him to serve a mission. This is the same thing that they're doing. This is their modus operandi. They put out this shallow stuff without even thinking about how it's going to come off. And then somebody catches them and they go, oh crap, let's just go ahead and revise the article.
But I will say this, like they have considerable reach. And so while I understand it and I'm kind of with you about, look, I know what you are when I pick you up. So I know what, you know, whatever. At the same time, I'm glad that with their considerable reach, you have people like Jana. And I would even say you have people like us who are holding their feet to the fire and saying, you, with your considerable reach, you should have more ethical responsibilities and you should be a little more careful about what you're doing instead of just drivel like this. So speaking of impressions that people might have about things, let's get into another interesting story that happened this week. This is from Gallup. Trump approval was the highest among Mormons and the lowest among Muslims. Oh, my goodness, did this create a big stir. A Gallup tracking poll conducted in 2017, which is important. It was released in 2018, but it was conducted during 2017 based on 122,000 interviews. It's a daily tracking poll, so they were getting in touch with people day after day after day. Found that by religious identification, 61% of Mormons, which is a sample size of about 2,200 Mormons, approved of President Donald Trump, which was the highest among the religious groups tracked, and 18% of Muslims, a sample size of 890, approved of President Trump, which was the lowest of those groups. So the Mormons, out of all the religious groups, were the highest, and the Muslims were the lowest. A couple interesting things about this. The Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News both interviewed Quinn Monson, who is an associate professor of political science at LDS Church-owned Brigham Young University, and also wrote a great book with David Campbell called, I want to say it's like Keeping the Promised Land. It's a great book on politics and Mormonism and the history of the LDS people within politics. Really, really good and really like data heavy if you're interested in that kind of stuff. So this is what Quinn told Peggy Stack at the Salt Lake Tribune. He said, actually, the numbers are about 20 points lower than what they should be for Mormon approval ratings of Republican presidential candidates. It's gone up since the summer of 2016, when Trump was at 33% approval among Mormons, but it's not approaching 80%, which is where it would be for a different early-term Republican president. Monson notes that while Mormons may, as a group, still back Trump, it's likely because most of them are in the somewhat approved category, especially given Trump's comments about immigrants, the strong language he uses, and his tweets. Even if they're loyal Republicans, they're still unhappy loyal Republicans, Monson said. This is what he said to the Deseret News, Trent Toon at the Deseret News. Monson said the poll is measuring support for the president's policies, not necessarily how he has conducted himself in office, something that has turned off many Mormons. They're happy with some of his policies, but unhappy with his style. Very unhappy in some cases, Monson said. With a normal Republican president, I would expect his approval among Mormons to be in the high 70s, or as he told Peggy Stack, in the 80s. I bet you it's somewhere between the 70s and the 80s, which is where they should be.
Well, that's an interesting take on it. I think he sheds a little bit of light on this, but it raises a couple of questions, right? Like, what did the poll actually ask, first of all, right? How was this phrased? Was it really phrased towards policy versus personality? I do think it's really interesting that he said that that it may, you know, among Mormons for early term Republican presidents, you would expect to see something more along the lines of 80% approval rating. And the fact that it's at 61% shows that Mormons actually are not as ecstatic over Trump as they may have otherwise been with another candidate. I mean, I can guarantee you that if it was Romney in the office, he would have had a, you know, 95% approval rating easily from Utah. So, you know, those are some really interesting things. And I think that, when I came across this news, I was like, are you kidding me, Mormons?
Yeah.
Like, cause you know, my feelings towards Trump, I've made that plainly obvious. Trump is, you know, and for me, he's a joke and he's an embarrassment in the White House. And I disagree with almost everything that he says and does, but I was just like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. 61% of you. Like, I just wanted to like run away and like, you know, just go hide for a while and be like, okay, you guys are nuts. But I think that Monson kind of helps me cool down a little bit and say, okay, so what we're saying is that Mormons are even more nuts about Republicans than this usually. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's another thing that should be taken into consideration. They're talking specifically. So Quinn is comparing this 61% against first term early Republican presidents. Right. And so even if you think about that, if I'm just going back in my head, you've got George W. Bush, you've got H.W. Bush, you've got Reagan.
Which I'm sure Reagan did quite well here in Utah.
Yeah, but Reagan was doing well everywhere in the 80s, right? And then I think it would probably be Ford. But I don't even think back when Ford was in office, I still don't think that we had the strong Republican streak that we see now within Mormonism. So even still, you're only looking at three presidents that you could really go back at and compare. And so what I think is it's that 61% is interesting, but we're still in this phase of let's continue gathering data and compare it against what's going on. Additionally, I think that politics right now is a lot more fractured. And so even within the Republican-leaning Mormons and conservative-leaning Mormons, you had a big fraction of them that split off from the Donald Trump movement and were gathering with Evan McMullen. I know a few people who are really strong supporters of Evan McMullen. So you start putting all that together, and it doesn't surprise me. I still think that 61% is high. And this is something I think that is also important. Monson questioned the poll having a single category for all Protestant and other Christian faiths that included evangelicals who make up a significant portion of the base for Trump support. So I didn't go through and list all the different religions that are included, but it is interesting that there are some notable, I don't know how you would phrase it, but not exceptions, but groups that are singled out like the LDS people within the modern Christian movements. But then there's also these huge lumpings together, and I'm sitting there going, that's a little weird to be doing it that way, considering all the different stripes that you might have. That was something that stood out to me as well.
Right. I mean, if you look at the, particularly like the Northern Presbyterian churches versus like the Southern Baptist churches, for instance, if they're going to be grouped together as one lump, then that's going to be some pretty skewed data because they're going to be both pretty sharply divided. Yeah. On questions like Trump. But, you know, this on the same token, you know, we took a look back at Mormons' response to Obama, and he got a 19% rating among Mormons. So, you know, what it shows is that Mormons are very, generally very loyal to their Republican political leaders.
And I would even say with Obama, though, one of the big differences with Obama was Obama beat Romney. And so, wow, but then again, you're talking about Obama. If you're talking about a first term Obama, he would have beaten McCain at that time. And
yeah, and I don't know that this was first term. It may have been the end of his presidency when this number came up of 19%. Maybe he had a higher during his first term, during his first year, and it went downhill from there. I don't know. But point being,
I think the numbers, there's more to dig into with the numbers. I think that 61% could be jarring for some people, especially if you're already not a big fan of President Donald Trump. But I do think that once Gallup starts maybe potentially releasing some of the questions that were asked, some of the ways, the methodology that they were using for this poll, I think it'd be interesting to dig into. But Brian, we're not done with the Trumper. So we have a little bit of a rule on the podcast when it comes to our language, right? And I think you and I were going back and forth about this. What's the rule that we have as far as the level of language we're supposed to use? Are we allowed to say naughty words?
Well, I mean, we try to keep the show family friendly. We try to keep it something that people could listen to in the car with their kids in the back seat and not worry too much. But at the same time, I would say we're a PG-13 show. And I don't know about you, but the last time that I went to go see any Marvel movie, there's a few colorful words thrown around in those movies. And I've got my kids next to me watching them, and we're all having a good time. So this is my general rule. If it's in the Bible or if it's been said by Brigham Young, then it's probably fair.
So, okay. And that's kind of how I live my life. I mean, Brian, I don't think you can go wrong basing your language on a prophet of God in the LDS church. I mean, I not that I want to get all preachy and everything, but you know, Brigham Young was a prophet and you know, okay. So that being said, everyone, I'm going to forewarn you, I'm going to say a bad word. This is from the Washington Post. President Trump grew frustrated with lawmakers Thursday in the Oval Office when they discussed protecting immigrants from Haiti, El Salvador, and African countries as part of a bipartisan immigration deal, according to several people briefed on the meeting. Quote, "Why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here?" Trump said, according to these people, referring to countries mentioned by the lawmakers. Trump then suggested that the United States should instead bring in more people from countries such as Norway, whose prime minister he met with Wednesday. The president, according to a White House official, also suggested he would be open to more immigrants from Asian countries because he felt that they helped the United States economically. In addition, the president singled out Haiti, telling lawmakers that immigrants from that country must be left out of any deal, these people said. "Why do we need more Haitians?" Trump said, according to people familiar with the meeting. "Take them out."
So before we continue with this, we're not a general news commentary, show. We're not here to just cover Trump. I mean, that would be fascinating from a Mormon angle, but we try to stick with stories that have some sort of a Mormon connection to it. So Brant, tell me, what's the Mormon connection here?
How about this one? This is from the Salt Lake Tribune. Utah's Mia Love, the only Haitian American in Congress, said Trump should apologize for his S-hole comment. This is what Mia Love said at the Salt Lake International Airport as she was coming back to Utah. "The president's comments are unkind, divisive, elitist, and fly in the face of our nation's value," Love said in a statement, noting that her parents, Mary and Jean Maxime Bordeaux, immigrated from Haiti and made their home in America. Quote, "This behavior is unacceptable from the leader of our nation. Her parents," she said, "took an oath to their adopted country and took on the responsibilities of everything that being a citizen comes with. They never took a thing from our federal government," she added. "They worked hard, paid taxes, and rose from nothing to take care of and provide opportunities for their children. They taught their children to do the same. That's the American dream." Mia Love said, "The president must apologize to both the American people and the nations he so wantonly maligned." Love talked to the media at Salt Lake International Airport on Thursday night after getting off a plane. Quote, "I doubt that a comment like that would have been made if someone like me is sitting across the table from him," Love told KUTV Channel 2, which is big and bold, especially because Mia Love is still a relatively junior member of the legislative body. But I'm reading that going, wow, I'm really glad that you said that, because I don't think that is something that a lot of people take into consideration. The fact that we sometimes need to think of what would these comments be like if someone else was in the room. And I'm not saying that as far as like measuring your comments to making sure they were being said respectfully, but I also wonder if that is Mia Love potentially taking a shot at the potential lack of diversity that is in the Donald Trump bubble.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I have to say to Mia Love. Thank you for this. Good for you. And thank you for writing this. President must apologize to both the American people and the nations that he so wantonly maligned. It coming from you, this is a powerful statement. When you ended this statement, you said, "I doubt that comments like that would have been made if somebody like me was sitting across the table from him." Maybe. You never know what flies out of the guy's mouth. He probably wouldn't even realize that you were, you know, Haitian descent, to be honest with you. And you'd throw something out and then, you know, you'd be like, "Well, actually, you know, my parents were from Haiti," and he would just make a joke out of it. But
I love the Haitian people. They're great people. I was not talking about your family. I was talking about everybody else. But the Haitian, they're great people.
Yeah, great people. It's just the country, right? I mean, not to get off the Mormon angle here, but I love that Trump was like, why don't we get more Norwegians? The Norwegians are sitting there going, why would we want to come to your asshole country? but they're like the wealthiest people. Aren't they like the wealthiest per capita people in like the entire like globe or something like that? And like highly educated. They've got healthcare paid for by their taxes, education paid for by their taxes. They're living pretty good over there. And they're just like, yeah, we'll take a pass on that invite.
So here's the thing. Listen, I'm the type of guy, I could twist a Mormon angle in anything. Here's an interesting Mormon angle for you. Not that I think that Donald Trump is measuring his reelection chances based on if the Mormons are going to vote for him. But I will say this, even though there might not be a sizable, and I'm not even going to pretend that I know the number of Mormons that come from any of those countries that he mentioned, right? However, do not discount the fondness that Mormon missionaries feel for the countries that they served. And I'm sure there's probably been a significant amount of Mormon missionaries that have served in those countries. And all of a sudden you're like, buddy, I lived there for 2 years. No, 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 no. You do not have the right to say that about a country that I lived in. Because I'm from South Korea. So anything that happens with North Korea and some of the stuff that's going on in South Korea right now, I'm very sensitive to it. And I'm not even going to act like I am one of those people who lives through this stuff day after day. But there is a fondness. Part of my heart does lie in South Korea, like so many Mormon missionaries with some of these other places. And so, yeah, there is a Mormon angle. Not that the Mormon return missionaries are going to be the deciding factor in Donald Trump's reelection or not. But still, it's just another step that the president has taken to, from what it seems like, make another boneheaded comment and continue to lop off another potential reelection side. And I'm just sitting here going, like, aside from just the incredible callousness and insensitivity and boorishness of this comment, this isn't even smart politics. Smart politics is you want everybody to vote for you, so you're buttering everybody up. You're doing the opposite. So I don't even know.
I think you raise a really good point, though, about, so oftentimes when I think about immigrants and refugees, I think about early church history. Because, I mean, really, to be honest, let's just be honest, the church wouldn't exist without immigration. I'm talking early church history. I'm talking like 1850s church history, when we set up like the Perpetual Immigration Fund, and we started bringing people in from Great Britain, from Scandinavian countries, from Holland. And
if we didn't have Europe, we wouldn't have survived. There wasn't enough Mormons in America for us to survive.
Right. It would have been very difficult anyway, or we would have survived, and it would have just been a really small kind of isolated movement like the Shakers or something like that. But I mean, except we had kids. But at any rate, the point being, because of that, I think that we have a legacy and a groundwork laid down of being pretty pro-immigration. But you brought up something, because, you know, again, my mind always goes back to history. You brought up something really important, that our missionaries are out in those fields. And any time that you get people out in the fields where they're getting more exposure to diversity of culture, to international customs, to the ways that people live, it breaks down a lot of those stereotypes, and it breaks down a lot of those assumptions that people have that we're dealing with, awful people or uneducated people or, you know, whatever the case is. And I think that for Mormons, we should be particularly sensitive to that, because, you know, that's one of the benefits of serving a mission, right? I mean, if you're lucky enough to get a foreign mission, but heck, even if you aren't, even if you're sent to you know, the south part of the United States, it breaks down some stereotypes.
Or potentially Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, or Detroit, Michigan, you know? Yeah. I mean, I have all sorts of stereotypes about you people in Detroit.
Anyway, so Brian, speaking about presidents, the peaceful transition of power, No, we really don't have that too much within the LDS Church. Anyways, Brian, we can't get enough of this New York Times obituary. It feels like it's like literally last week's news, but it's still going on. So file this one. You know what? Where we had that modest Golden Globes dresses thing, and that Mormon's going to Mormon section, let's just go ahead and tuck this one right behind that. This is a petition from change.org that is calling on the New York Times to apologize for the obituary they wrote for LDS Church President Thomas S. Monson. This was by Nathan Cunningham of Sparks, Nevada. The New York Times recently wrote an obituary of Thomas S. Monson, formerly president of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Instead of highlighting the positive aspects of his life or a neutral statement about the facts of his life, they decided to attack and disparage his character and used his obituary as a political statement against him and the church as a whole, and tweeted a clickbait headline to attack even further. Fidel Castro and others have had more neutral obituaries, which shows this is either a direct attack or a complete misunderstanding of religions or religious people. We recognize that all people, including the New York Times and its authors, have the right to free speech and free press. However, an obituary should not be used as a political platform. We are asking the New York Times formally apologize for this bias in reporting and present an honest, neutral, and balanced obituary. And as of tonight's recording, this obit has over, or this change.org petition has over 190,000 signatures. Brian.
Oh, so many thoughts.
Hot take when you saw this change.org position, because
Mormons, stop.
Stop.
You're embarrassing me. Stop. Just let it go. And I mean, I love this question. Would they write a similar scathing remark about the Pope? Yes. Yes, they would. I'm sorry, but that's what they do. And yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, we went off on this New York Times obituary last week, and we called it, you know, something that was a bit more of a hit piece than it was an obit. And I still stick by those words, but I got over it, right? Like, I mean, like an hour later, I got over it. I wasn't like, we should start a petition. Maybe that'll change things. I mean, that's just, okay.
It's slacktivism at its finest, Brian. That's what it is. Like, I am going to, you know what? I'm going to put my name on this so that people know just how indignant I am.
So I blame this on social media, Brant. I blame this on the fact that it's so easy to set up a petition now on change.org that people just get like fired up and they just do it over anything. Right. So, I mean, you know, Hostess changes a chemical in their Twinkies and we file a freaking petition.
Is this going to be one of those old man Brian, shakes fist?
You kids. You know, when you had to actually go out and like stomp the streets with like petition boards and stuff like that, people were a little bit more picky and choosy over what it is that they would go petition over. But now we're just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get on the internet and I'm going to create me a petition and put it on the face webs. See how many signatures I can get. 190,000 signatures. Are you? Get out of here.
Because it doesn't really take anything to do a signature.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. They royally ticked me off with that one. I'm gonna put my name on that. On the other hand, we've got Ethan Dodge, who, you know, we had come on the show a little bit. He wrote an opinion piece with Salt Lake Tribune titled "Two Mormon Petitions Show the Contrasting Priorities of Members," where he contrasted this New York Times obit petition piece at 190,000 signatures with the petition to stop bishops from interviewing kids about sexual topics, which has gotten about 11,000 signatures. And so, you know, Ethan is making kind of a decent point that when we're talking about something external, like our image, you know, and like how our prophet's being portrayed in the public, then we're all about getting fired up and putting our name on those petitions and coming out in droves with our little tiki torches in hands. But when it comes to something like the internal challenges that we need to honestly face and take a look at, such as, you know, should bishops be asking kids whether or not they touch themselves at 11 years old, then we're a lot more reluctant to put our names on, or it just doesn't catch quite as much attention. So,
well, I'll say this as far as the discrepancy is, as far as signatures goes. That change.org position against the New York Times, that was the equivalent of Hulk Hogan, you know, swinging his hand around and then cupping it to his ear to see what the crowd was going to say. Like, that's essentially what that was. It was an easy one.
It's just a please be nice to us. Please like us. Please like our prophets, because we're really good people and our prophets are amazing. And please don't say anything bad about them. That's all it was. It was just groveling. It's groveling.
But here's the interesting thing. The New York Times responded. So, this is from the New York Times. Our obituary editors on coverage of former Mormon leader Thomas S. Monson. So, this is from the editor of the obituary section within the New York Times. He said, quote, "But I also acknowledge that many of those who found the obituary wanting," "feel we did not provide a more rounded view of Mr. Monson, perhaps his more human side. I'll concede that what we portrayed was the public man, not the private one, or the one known to his most ardent admirers. In 2020 hindsight, we might have paid more attention to the high regard which he was held within his church. I still think, by his very position in the church, all that was implied, but perhaps we should have stated it more plainly. Still, on balance, I think the obituary makes it clear that he was a man of strong faith and convictions who stood by them even in the face of detractors while finding ways to move the church forward." He continues, "We're not in the business of paying tribute. We're journalists first and foremost. I think in tracing the life of a religious leader, it would almost go without saying that he or she had won the respect and admiration of those who put them in positions to lead. but we may well quote someone explaining that respect or admiration if it would offer something substantive to our reader's understanding of an individual. In other words, we're not going to quote someone simply saying, Mr. Smith was a wonderful person, but we will quote someone saying why he was, which was an interesting way to respond to, obviously, the, I think some of the traction that some of the different outlets covering Mormonism picked up, plus the petition, plus maybe a couple of other more conservative-leaning outlets who were writing about this. It was interesting to see a response, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I think with a petition that large, I guess that's what you get out of it, is you get a response like this that says, we did what professional journalists do. Sorry you didn't like it, but you're right. Maybe we could have said something nice. We could have quoted somebody saying something nice if that would have made you feel better. That's kind of what they're saying.
Kind of ringing in my ear. We don't apologize. Does that sound familiar at all?
Oh,
I don't know.
He went there.
It was from like a 2015 Elder Dallin H. Oaks. That's kind of what it sounded like.
That's kind of what it felt like. With a little bit more concession in it, even of saying, yeah, we could have said something nice, but you know, we figure you guys already knew that.
Right. And you know, so it's been interesting to watch the development of this story over the last couple of weeks. And you and I were just talking before the show. What seems to happen is news breaks. We cover it quickly. We give our initial hot takes, right? And then another week goes by and more commentary comes out, more stuff comes out. We stew on a little bit more. And it's like, all right, we got to get in here for one last take. I'm not going to read all this, but James Goldberg, does that name sound familiar, Brian?
He was our very first guest on our very first show.
Oh, man, back when we were both young,
yeah.
I had hair, you were still clean shaven. Oh, it was a lifetime ago. Anyways, James Goldberg at his blog, Mormon Midrashim, has a really, really good rational take on the Thomas S. Monson obituary. He looks at it both as an American and as a Latter-day Saint. I'm not going to read all of it, but just a quick part. As a religious Latter-day Saint, I have a totally different reaction than I do as a Mormon American. As an American, I wish the times had reached beyond their own insularity. As a Latter-day Saint, I find it telling that they could not. The superficiality of the Times' response is a witness to me of the depth and significance of a spiritual version that even their substantial resources do not allow them to access. And I'd recommend that everyone read this. It was a really good take. Another one, another quick take. This is from Hal Boyd at the National Review. That name might sound familiar. Hal Boyd is the opinion editor of the Deseret News, and the New Republic is a... I don't even know if it's the New Republic. I've got National Review here, so it's probably the National Review. And in my show notes, I probably screwed up, but whatever. We're going to do this live, so whatever. Anyways, his column was titled The Progressive Art of Shaming Mormons. The National Review is a more conservative-leaning outlet. McDonald's admission, McDonald is the editor of the obituary section of the New York Times. McDonald's admission is admirable. We all have lapses in judgment. But after the news of recent weeks during which we have learned how damaging it can be to focus on a public persona while glossing over private behavior, it seems odd that the Times would not be more eager to at least give equal billing to the private life of such a person of prominence. If, as it sadly appears, the New York Times was, in the name of greater inclusion, attempting to stigmatize or shame a deceased LDS prophet and the Mormon faith, its efforts amount to the kind of hypocrisy more commonly associated with Hawthornian clergymen than with news organizations. Brian, I'm going to say this, and I think this will be the... Oh, gosh, I was going to use a horrible choice of words. I was going to say, I think this will be the nail in the coffin on this obituary.
But not
the most appropriate thing. This will be my final word, okay? I think the petition is silly. I think it was a tacky obituary. I expect better of the New York Times. I gasp. I actually like the New York Times. I really like their religion reporter. This was a disappointment because I expected them to be a little more rational and to take a step back and try to look at the entire thing from a more rational and 10,000 foot view perspective. How do we put Thomas Monson's life into perspective for non-Mormons?
Well, and to me, it felt like the writer of this obituary didn't really know that much about Thomas Monson. It felt to me like he went through perhaps the archives of the New York Times to see what articles had been published that mentioned his name in the past, maybe did a Google search. I mean, the fact that one of the few quotes that he does have in there was actually from a Baptist counter-cult ministry tells me that he wasn't really digging into this very deep. It was kind of an assignment that he had to get done and out of the way, probably didn't care that much about who he was, and probably had no idea that he was going to offend, almost a million people enough to sign a petition.
Whereas you could look at someone like Lori Goodstein from the New York Times, who is interviewed and and talked with people when she does stories on Mormonism, such as Phil Barlow, Richard Bushman, Terrell Givens, Steve Evans, which, by the way, that's actually a really weird random one to include with those three luminaries, Bushman, Barlow, Givens, and Steve Evans. But I digress. Anyways, you've got a group of people that she talks with who are really, really good minds to talk to about Mormon things, and she tries. She really legitimately tries to do a good job covering Mormonism. How do I know that? I've talked with her about it before, and I've talked with her about her reporting style and how she does her research about Mormonism to do a good job reporting it. Here's what I would say, though. Let's just ignore this change.org petition, because honestly, as a Mormon, it's a little embarrassing to me. There are lots of good obituaries and in memoriams from various places. We covered them last week. Go look at those. Go look at McKay Coppins. Go look at Gordon Monson's. Go look at Peggy Fletcher Stacks. Go look at Trent Toons. They're all really good. I would much rather focus on the quality pieces that have been written than give Robert Flanders, who wrote that New York Times obituary, any more of my time. And I think that's where we should end it with the obituary. Any other thoughts on the obituary, Brian? Are we good?
No, let's let this ship sail on. You know, I think, like you said, you put a nail into that coffin.
Okay. So let's talk about the really big news of the week, the funeral of President Thomas S. Monson. Something interesting that Peggy Fletcher Stack noted in the Tribune. Let's go through some notable faces. This is almost like a who's who of who would show up at a LDS church president's funeral. Regarding some of the interfaith faces that were there, Bishop Oscar A. Solis and Monsignor J. Terrence Fitzgerald of the Catholic Diocese of Salt Lake City, Imam Muhammad Metar of the Khadija Islamic Center in West Valley City, and the Reverend France Davis, longtime pastor of the Salt Lake City's Calvary Baptist Church.
Incidentally, I just want to point out that during the funeral, the Cathedral of Madeline, which is just down the street from Temple Square, did ring their bells, as is a customary tradition whenever one of the LDS presidents passes.
And I would say a very touching sign of respect, too, from them. It was very, very touching to hear those bells and to hear people talking about hearing the bells from the Catholic Church. Okay, so there's a couple others that we should call out. Political dignitaries, Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, and Utah Governor Gary Herbert were there. A few rows behind them were former GOP presidential nominee Mittens, Mitt Romney, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, Jeff Flake of Arizona, and Dean Heller of Utah, along with some of the Utah's reps Rob Bishop and Mia Love, Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox, all of whom are Mormon. Even farther back from that row was Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Viscupsi, Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams, and a number of Utah legislators. So there was a decent amount there, Brian. Some quasi celebrities, I guess you could say, or something like that. So we got to talk a little bit about this funeral. I should probably like say it in a little bit better inflection and intonation than that. Let's just run through the program. The opening prayer was by M. Russell Ballard. The first speaker was Ann Dibbs, who is he is President Monson's son, and Brian, it is escaping
daughter. Daughter.
I'm sorry, daughter. Listen, cold medicine.
Right. Sipping NyQuil whatever. Through a straw.
I learned from the best. I learned from Geraldine. Okay, so Ann Dibbs is President Monson's daughter. Do you remember her calling within the LDS Church?
Oh, she was it. Wasn't she in the Relief Society presidency?
That's what it was. Relief Society presidency. Dieter Uchtdorf, who was President Monson's second counselor, Henry Eyring, who was President Monson's first counselor, Russell Nelson, who was the president of the Quorum of the Twelve and is going to be the future president of the LDS Church. And the closing prayer was by Jeffrey Holland. Brian, anything that stood out to you regarding President Monson's funeral?
Yeah, I mean, besides the fact that this was just a mini general conference.
It was general conference light, wasn't it?
It was general conference light. I mean, it was like not even like a full session of general conference, but everything felt just like general conference. I mean, overall, I hate to say it because, you know, I was really looking for some good closure. I mean, not that I was like torn up about President Monson's passing. It wasn't like a big surprise or anything like that, but I was looking for a funeral that would maybe give us a little bit of insight into who he was as a person, as an individual, not just some of his church service accomplishments, which I understand he spent the majority of his life on. So, I mean, he had, you know, 65 years of church service. That was his life. But on the other hand, it's like, I kind of felt like I didn't get to know who President Monson was anymore during this funeral than I really knew who he was as an individual before this funeral. I wanted to hear them say things like, oh, Tom, he used to come into the quorum meetings. He always had a bowl full of M&Ms. and a Diet Coke, you know, and hang out, you know, and he'd always be passing them around in the quorum meetings. And he loved peanut M&Ms. Those are his favorite. I wanted to hear a little like anecdotal things like that. You know, I didn't. Instead, it was something that I felt like was going to get printed in the Ensign next month. It was very formal.
And this is probably not going to make some people happy. I'm with you. There is something to be said about, especially with someone like President Monson, who is at the position that he was, humanizing him a little bit, which is kind of what you're saying. I was reading something today for something I was working on, and it was describing some of the leadership styles of people within the LDS Church. And I think what I was reading, and I'm completely spacing it, it might have been in Peggy Stack's article, or another article or something. Anyways, President Hinckley, very much a stickler for, we start meetings on time. So if we're starting a meeting at 1 o'clock, if I'm the only person in the room, I'm talking to an empty room because we started on time. Whereas someone else had said, President Monson wasn't like that. President Monson, he was usually, if he was coming late from a meeting, from another meeting, and he was late, it is what it is. Okay, we'll do it when it happens. I think that's what I want to hear a little bit more about. I want to hear humanizing and personality. And I think I was trying to figure out what was going on during the funeral, because in a sense, you quote unquote got that, but you got that within a church context. And I think the problem that I might have with it is that's all we seem to hear about these individuals. For example, I found out through some other research that I was doing, President Monson loved pigeons, Wouldn't that have been a fun story to hear about, just his love for pigeons and how fondly he was around pigeons?
Yeah, we talked about that in our extended sessions last episode.
Wouldn't it be fun for Anne to talk about what it was like having dad as President Monson and going through a little bit of that? Wouldn't it be interesting hearing what it was like having a father who was in the Quorum of the Twelve since probably almost as long as she was born? I think that'd be fascinating. That'd be a great way of looking back at it.
Yeah, maybe some of the pranks that we had pulled on him at Christmas time or something like that. You know, just something that just kind of gave us a sense for his personality. And I got a sense for his service and for his commitment and his loyalty to the church, to its people. But I didn't get a sense for him as just a guy. And you know, for me, the best part of the entire funeral was actually the closing prayer. And it wasn't because I was sitting there saying I'm waiting for this thing to get over. It was because Jeffrey Holland took advantage of that time, giving the closing prayer, to really give his own small eulogy. And it was very touching, particularly when he reminded us of the tremendous sacrifice that children and families, you know, pay while their parents are called as general authorities. And, you know, he said some things about creating memories with your children. And it was really touching to me because that's something that we don't think about. We don't think about the struggle that it is for children of general authorities to feel the same kind of to get the same kind of memories and the same kind of connection with their parents that the rest of us just take for granted.
Well, it was almost like Holland was like, hold on, guys, y'all are not very good at doing a eulogy. So guess what? You're going to give me 5 minutes for a closing prayer. I'm going to take every single second of those 5 minutes, and I'm going to give a proper eulogy in the form of a closing prayer. Because that's what it was. I was sitting really there going, there we go. And it's not like it was there were some touching personal moments. I believe Iring brought up the fact that he was at President Monson's bedside when he passed away. Very touching moment. And one of those things where I would, in my mind's eye, I totally see Iring as being the type of person to do that. But what I felt happened, and this probably is going to tick people off, it was so completely sanitized, and it was so completely, it is exactly.
It felt rehearsed.
It was rehearsed. It was formalized. And I'm sure there are things that go into that. For example, the fact that it was going to be broadcast to millions of people if you were deciding to live stream it wherever you were in the entire world. They probably wanted to make sure that the talks could be easily translated so that anyone who was watching, and no matter what language, you would be able to get all that information. I get that. I also get the fact that you're doing live TV. You've got the lights. You've got cameras. You've got all that. I get it. But I also sit there and go, man, this is part of the problem that we seem to be having within the LDS Church. And I think this is a little bit of my frustration that I have with some of the speculation that was going on this past week about the personality of Thomas Monson, because I've heard some things that would say that he is a very, very warm-hearted person. I've heard people say he has a photographic memory. That's the reason why he remembers every single one of those widows that he grew up with when he was a young bishop. I've also heard people saying that, guess what? He could have a short temper. He wasn't always the nicest. I kind of sit there and say, part of the problem when you have a leadership that is so far separated from their membership, just by nature of the world that we live in, the amount of Mormons that happen and everything, when you have leadership that is so far separated, what seems to happen is if you continue reinforcing a stereotype or I don't want to say a caricature, but almost a wooden figurine of what this person is supposed to be, when they encounter that and it's not that way, it can really mess with people. And that's why, look, it's probably not the most sensitive way of putting it, but I tell people to kill your heroes. Kill your heroes, because that way you can't possibly be disappointed. And that's what I think that I would like to, not that I want to hear all the nitty-gritty details behind Thomas Monson, but I'm with you, Brian. Give me some personality here. Show me what it was like having, if President Monson was someone who had served in the Quorum of the 12 Apostles with Russell M. Nelson for 34 years. And I know he served for 34 years because Nelson was called in 1984. I was born in 1984. I just had a birthday. I'm 34 years old. 34 years of friendship within the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. Nelson, you don't have any touching personal stories about Thomas Monson. The story about East Germany was great. It was a good story, but that was a story that reinforced church leadership. That wasn't a story that told us anything about Thomas S. Monson, the person. And that's what I wanted to hear a little bit more about. So I'm not sure if you had any other thoughts on the story. Brian, it's probably going to be included. The entire funeral is going to be included in a special edition of the Ensign magazine. And guess what? We're probably going to be covering some of the talks at the funeral in a Sunday school lesson somewhere, because that's what we do in the church. I just wanted a little bit more. And that's why, thank God, and I mean this sincerely, thank God for Jeffrey R. Holland to get up there and say, guys, we've got to do this right. This man deserves a proper eulogy, and I'm going to do it. And he did it.
Yeah, so first of all, I don't think that we know how to do meetings any other way. When it gets to that level of the church, and you're right, when you're talking about translating into different languages, when you're talking about being multi-broadcast, talking about every word being recorded down and saved forever, I don't think we know how to be candid anymore at that level. And so everything is going to be scripted. It's going to be staged. It's going to be read off of a teleprompter. Every word is going to be chewed over. It's going to have staff looking at it and all this kind of stuff. We have a really hard time breaking out of that just by the nature of the international church. Number two, I don't want to die as a general authority or as a spouse to a general authority. I want a real funeral. I want people getting up there talking about, you know, how I spiked the punch bowl when I was a Cub Scout, things of substance.
Well, and I
didn't do. I was a Boy Scout, not a Cub Scout.
I was telling you this, Brian, as the funeral was going on. My dad's rule for his funeral is, I want to be cremated. And B, I want you guys to all tell funny stories. And C, the money that you're going to take that you're going to spend on a funeral that I'm going to be cremated, you're going to take everyone out to lunch. And no, Brent, you're not going to be able to take them out to Taco Bell because you're a cheapskate. You're going to take that money. You're going to take them somewhere nice. That's the funeral that he wants. He wants funny stories and good food. Just really quickly, Fox News did pick up on the story. It was they picked up on the AP report from Brady McCombs. Brady did write this in his report. Monson's presidency was marked by his noticeably low profile during a time of intense publicity for the church, including the 2008 and 2012 presidential campaigns of Mormon Mitt Romney. Monson's most public acts were appearances at church conferences and dedications of church temples. I would say that that's very accurate reporting, and I don't think that nobody should have any problem with what Brady said, because we are done with eulogizing and obituatizing Thomas S. Monson, because there's more news to come. So, Brian, what comes next? I've got a jingle from Hamilton in my head right now. Well, first, something interesting. President Nelson signs new Mormon mission calls during an apostolic interregnum. I'm sure
that sounds so Catholic. An apostolic interregnum.
I'm sure you have brushed up on your Latin. So, could you tell me what an interregnum is?
No.
Okay. We'll probably cover it next week anyways. So
maybe they'll make that our question of the week. What's an interregnum? I have no idea.
So the LDS Church mailed out 1,150 letters extending mission calls to young Mormon men and women on Tuesday over the signature of President Russell M. Nelson, a symbol of the transition underway in church leadership. The Quorum of the 12 Apostles is leading the church during what is known formally as an apostolic Interregnum.
Interregnum, by the way, just Googled it, means a period when normal government is suspended, especially between successive reigns or regimes.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. With President Nelson leading.
So during this downtime, that's basically what he said.
Yeah, it's we're on pause right now, so I got to take the reins. And all right, so that's going to happen with President Nelson leading the quorum as a senior apostle. So Brian, the first question that I had was, I mean, how long are these things going to go on eBay with some eager missionary trying to pass it off as a collector's item, trying to sell it off to, you know, Kurt Bench at Benchmark Books, where Kurt's going to be like, come on, get out of here with that. That's got, no, that's nothing. But this is interesting. So this was, again, in the Trent Toon's Deseret News article. Regarding the transition time, Elder M. Russell Ballard, the third most senior apostle in the church, said quorum business is relatively light this week. It's been very quiet as we honor the passing of a president, he said. In reverence to the deceased president, we just don't do much prior to the funeral. There's not much to talk about, really. Not much you can say or do or decide, because there will be a new first presidency. And then when the new first presidency is in place, then we will be very, very busy. I'm sorry, we'll be very busy, very busy. Interesting little side note that I found as I was looking at gaps between LDS church presidents and how long it took. It looks like, Brian, back in the 1800s, it was not uncommon for this to go, like, not days at a time, not months at a time, sometimes even years at a time.
Brigham Young's was technically 3 years.
Yeah, which is crazy for people to think about that now. And as I was reading, it looks like, would it have been, I'm probably going to botch it. I want to say it was Woodruff. I'm not sure. But one of the LDS church presidents basically was like, look, we got to get this in place. I'm going to die here pretty soon, so make sure that everything's ready to go.
Well, what that story was that you had a couple of people that were potentially up for president of the church, depending on whether they looked at longevity in the presidency or they looked at age of the person that was in the presidency. And so you had John Willard Young, who was kind of a black sheep of Brigham Young's children, was coming in from New York on train, thinking that he had the right to assume the presidency. And while he was heading in from the east on train, they rewrote the rules to it's going to be the longest serving apostle as opposed to the oldest by age. And it wasn't the oldest by age at that point. It was the longest serving in the quorum as opposed to the longest ordained. Because at that time, they were doing ordinations sometimes separate from actually being called and serving in the quorum. And so although John Willard had been ordained since he was 11 years old, as an apostle, he had not served in the quorum, and that got him the boot out. But yeah, that decision was all made very quickly as he was heading west to take his proper position over church leadership. They're like, oh, no, we know all about you, and we're gonna make sure that this goes to.
We're not doing this stuff, yeah,
right? Exactly. So that's the story behind that. And ever since then, it has been longest serving in the quorum. Which leads us to the president of the quorum.
And I would also say it also speeds up that process because you after the death, you know, okay, so this is how it's going to go. Let's go through. I don't mean to be making light of it. This is actually what happens. We'll go through. We'll do our fasting and prayer. We'll do our normal time in the temple, and then we will all get together and we will have the discussion.
Yeah, mostly just to make sure that we feel good about the incoming president, right? That's or the incoming presidency or whatever the case may be. It's not a decision of who's it going to be. Is this the will of the Lord?
And I guess one could say, are we of one heart and one mind about this decision?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. So let's get to the really, really big news. I don't know, Brian, would it be inappropriate or sacrilege to call this Tuesday Super Tuesday?
You know, I think we should keep that for any successive successions. We should keep this as a Latter-day Saint Super Tuesday.
I would love that, and probably going to have some people that are not too happy with me about it. Let's go to the Herald Extra. New leadership for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints will likely be announced Tuesday morning after the church posted an announcement Saturday extending a special invitation to members to listen to a broadcast. I actually got this notice in my email inbox. Russell M. Nelson, who is expected to be announced as the church's next prophet, will give a live broadcasted message at 9 a.m. Tuesday, 9 a.m. Mountain Time. So for those of you on the East Coast like me, that'll be 11 a.m. on Tuesday, that will be shared across the church's broadcast, internet, and social media channels. A press conference will follow at 10 a.m. If they're doing a press conference, they're announcing the new LDS
presence. Wait. We're all assuming that that's what the announcement's going to be. It could be something completely different. My hopes? My hopes is that he's announcing finally the Grand Army of the Mormon Republic.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
And all the missionaries suddenly become active, like the little chips in them that just like, you know, churn on, and all of a sudden they become like the army of the Mormon Republic scattered throughout the world. Do I watch too much Star Wars?
I think so. Here's my other thought. And I, by the way, I really like your Clone Wars reference there. That was quite good. But here's my other thought. Wouldn't it be great if Nelson got up there and said, "All right, everyone, I am officially announcing the Constitution is hanging by a thread. Consider this the official pronouncement." Mittens, come on in here. And Mitt Romney comes in on his white coat, or on his white horse, and boom, we
clump, 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 clump.
We all know where we're going. Brian, this is, you know, we've been really delving into this Mormon's Gonna Morm file. Let's dive back in there. This is from the Deseret News Facebook page. In an unprecedented move, President Russell M. Nelson, president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, will introduce the new leadership of the LDS Church on Tuesday during a live broadcast at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, end quote. So, everyone, I want you to do yourself a phrase. Do yourself a favor, not a phrase. Do yourself a favor. Listen, it's been such a long week, everybody. I'm so sorry. I want you to Google the phrase, and do this in quotes, Deseret News Unprecedented. Here's the reason why. I knew that they had made that announcement and used that specific word. So I was trying to find, okay, where was it exactly? And I did that. Do you know how many search results have that in there? Mostly because the Deseret News needs to get a new thesaurus and stop using the word unprecedented. I don't know what it is about Mormons and hyperbole. Everything needs to be epic or historic or unprecedented or this or that. Guys, relax. Brian, you know how much of a stir it caused because they used the word unprecedented, right? Like, people lost their mind.
They're like, what's so unprecedented about this? And they're like looking it up, like, what's unprecedented here? And like expecting some meat to come out of it. But no, it's just them using it to get clicks.
Okay, as I start going down this road, what could be unprecedented? Nelson could get up and announce two new counselors. There is potential that could happen. That would be okay. Nelson could get up and announce, not only the two new counselors, but we're just going to go ahead and announce the two new apostles at this time. Okay, that's pretty good. A discussion that I was having on Facebook today, someone said, here would be the best. The unprecedented part being Nelson gets up there and announces that we're going to have a new apostle from Africa. Okay, I'm listening. And then proceeds to call Christoffel Golden, the white man from South Africa, who is currently in the Quorum of the 70 as the new apostle, which I thought that would be like the best troll job of anything. Like, I won't be happy, but at least you'll get a couple chuckles out of me. So here's the thing. This could be unprecedented because it's Nelson's first press conference. Sure, could be that way. This could be unprecedented because it will be live streamed. The church is going to be live streaming this through LDS.org. That's the most likely option. It could be unprecedented because Nelson might shake up the first presidency counselors. It could be unprecedented because the Deseret News and many Orthodox online Mormons love hyperbole. How about we just relax? How about we just see what happens? How about we not worry so much about what's going to happen and just let it happen? Because guys, I'm going to be honest with you. Y'all are going to be disappointed. Nothing's going to change. It's going to be Nelson. He's going to retain Eyring. I'm sorry, Brian. I'm stepping all over your hot take territory, but I am on a roll. It's going to be Eyring. It's going to be Uchtdorf, and nothing is going to change. It'll be fine. Don't work yourself up. Just relax, everybody.
But so. I still have these dreams. I still have these dreams, though, that he is going to get up on camera and he is going to announce emeritus status for all general authorities. He's going to put on a golf hat and he's going to go right off into the sunset because he's 93 years old and he deserves it.
Is it going to be a red hat with white lettering?
I hope so.
No, I hope not.
I'm kidding.
Anyways, okay, so I don't know. There's possibilities, there's probabilities. I might be an old cranky curmudgeon. I don't know.
Okay, so question of the week. Brant is convinced that he's going to keep the same counselors, that he's going to keep Eyring and Uchtdorf as his counselors. He's a traditionalist, and I think that he's smart enough to know that releasing at least Uchtdorf might be seen as a political move. I don't know how much he cares about that. But what do you guys think? Is he going to keep his counselors? Is he going to change them over? Is Brant right? What's your over under on this?
Yes.
What are you willing to put down on this?
Right. You know, Brian, I would put my hair on the line, but I don't think that's going to do much good. So I don't
know. How can people contact us and let us know what they think, if he's going to change his counselors, if he's going to keep them?
So you could go the traditional route. You could email us, mail@mormonnewsreport.com. You could hit us up on the Twitters at The Mormon News. You could find us on Facebook. Just look for Mormon News Report Podcast, or you can give me a call, 801-987-0192. You could text me, 801-987-0192. I'm probably not going to answer. It'll probably just go straight to voicemail. But if you text me, I might text you back. 801-987-0192. Go ahead and program it in your phone. Program it as your old pal, Matt. Gosh. Your old pal, Brampton Brian.
He gets his own name wrong. Yeah, this is a stage name, folks. Sorry.
And we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Let's talk about Patreon.
Let's do it. Folks, as you can tell, it's been kind of a crazy week here at the Mormon News Report headquarters. And if you're one of our video watchers, hi, how are you? You'll know that when I say Mormon News Report headquarters, that's just a fancy word for, my basement. Hey, we all can dream big, right? You want to know one of my dreams? Let me tell you one of my dreams. I would love to be encased in a bowl of Jell-O in a bathtub. You know, so I'm sitting in the bathtub and I've just got Jell-O all around me, and I just give a little jiggle jiggle with my hips just to see how much the Jell-O would rock.
That's kind of kinky.
Is that too much information? Is it just me? Did we just lose all of our listeners because they have that disgusting mental image? Well, you know what, everyone? No matter. At the end of the day, we all have dreams. And here's some life advice from your old pal, Brant. Sometimes those dreams can be a reality with a Patreon subscription to the Mormon News Report podcast. With your generous donation of $1 or more per month, you won't just get our heartfelt thanks and appreciation. You will get access to our elite extended sessions with the different guests we have on, where we break it down with a little bit of the slow jams. Just visit patreon.com/Mormon News Report. That's patreon.com/Mormon News Report, and become a subscriber today. Note, Patreon subscriptions will not go to fulfill Brant's dream of being encased in a bathtub full of Jell-O.
Oh, that's great. Should we talk about some books?
Let's do it. Let's do some quick hits. Brian,
all right. So right. I'm going to pull up this one first here, folks. This is a book that Signature Books sent us. It's titled A 3D Tour of Latter-day Saint History, Bringing B.H. Roberts Back to Life. It's edited by Stephen L. Richardson and Benjamin M. Richardson. Guys, this is a fantastic little book here. Let me tell you a little bit about it. So it's a reproduction of 12 stereographs. Now, stereographs are the old timey type photos that were done in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They would usually have two images side by side, kind of like the, when we were kids, we had these Viewmasters, right? And the way the Viewmasters would work is you'd put your face in these, in the plastic Viewmaster thing. You'd have the little round disc, and it would have two images side by side. And when it pulls it up and you're looking at it through the two different lenses, it would look 3D. It would pop out. Right. So if you get that concept, then you get the concept of this book, except this is like early 1900s Viewmaster type stuff. These were photos that were taken of important church historic sites that ran from Palmyra all the way over west to Salt Lake City. And it was originally a box set that was sold in 1904. They're all reproduced in this book. Now, you know, because people don't use stereographs anymore and they don't use they were made out of wood at the time, these wooden stereographic glasses and goggles. Now what we use is, 3D, like the blue and red, two different tone colored with the glasses. So that's what they did in the book. They, for every image that they did, they created, and it's hard to see it on here, but they created an image here that was made out of blue and red. And then they gave you, in the front of the book, a pair of actual 3D glasses that you can use to see the image. And let me tell you, it works. Those images really pop out, and it's a heck of a lot of fun to be able to watch. So getting back to the original intent of this, again, it was a box set that people could buy, and people actually went door to door to sell these things for this company that reproduced this. So you'd get a box set of these 12, or it wasn't 12 images, it was like 80 something images. And, they were pricey at the time. I mean, the equivalent of today's money was about $175 for the box set. And then if you wanted the viewer along with it, that was another $25 in today's money. So it would run you a couple hundred dollars in order to get this box set and this viewer to be able to entertain your family. But it was popular. And the reason it was popular is because this was at a time before there was really a national or international highway system. So people weren't traveling as much. Historic sites were big. People were really interested in historic sites, but they had a hard time getting there unless it was by train, which took a lot of planning, a lot of time, and then they'd have to coordinate some sort of a tour guide on the other side to be able to provide transportation to get them to the historic sites. This was a way before television to get basically a tour of church history sites into people's homes with these images. Now, B.H. Roberts was contracted by these folks that went around and took these images to write up a little pamphlet to go along in the box set. And he wrote up a 132-page pamphlet titled The Latter-day Saints Tour from Palmyra, New York to Salt Lake City. And that originally accompanied this box set. So what Signature Books has done is, beyond just reproducing these images, they've also included all of the text from B.H. Roberts in his 132-page pamphlet. And so there's 38 images total. And it's a narrative. It easily walks people through church history tours from Palmyra, moving through the Homestead, Hill Cumorah, Kirtland Temple, Carthage Jail, Nauvoo Mansion, Beehive House, the Great Salt Lake Pavilion that used to exist on Great Salt Lake, which was phenomenal, and more. And it ends with who at that time was the current president of the church, who was Joseph F. Smith. So this is a fantastic book. It's a truly beautiful production. They did a great job reproducing these images. They did a great job putting the narrative around it. It's a great gift book. And for those who tend to think of Signature Books as maybe critical of Mormon faith, and publishing, you know, books that tend to trend on the more negative side, this book is not one of those. This book is, I mean, the narrative, the text in it is by B.H. Roberts. So that's about as church-friendly as you're going to get on it. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. You can pick it up at Benchmark Books, Written Vision in Provo, Weller's, or if you're not in the Utah area, pick it up off of Amazon.com.
And I will say this. I think that this is really where Signature shines, is doing really, really good historical work that you might not see anywhere else. And it's one of those things where it's like, man, I love when Signature does stuff like this. So, okay, so let's talk about another book. This book, again, if you're watching us on the camera, I'm holding it up for you right now. This book is called Knowing Why, 137 Evidences That the Book of Mormon is True, edited by John Welch, Neil Rapply, The Smooter, Stephen O. Smoot, David J. Larson, and Taylor Halverson. It's published jointly by Covenant Communications and the Book of Mormon Central. So this is a big book, like not just lengthwise, like the number of pages, which it is, by the way. I mean, it's fairly big, but it is big. It reminds me of a textbook. That could be a good thing. That might not be a good thing. It depends on what you're interested in. But I think what does show is this is a book that is thick and that they actually spent some time as far as how they wanted the book to look. It is full color. Every single page is in full color, and they've got a lot of pictures in there. And each of the 137 evidences that they talk about is about one page front and back. So I think there's some benefit if you're the type of person who maybe wants to pick it up, read one of the 137 evidences that they talked about, get a little bit of information to move on. Or if you're someone who wants to focus on an entire section, maybe even an entire section of the Book of Mormon, which is their main focus, and they go by different books. This book was based on the Know Why series from Book of Mormon Central. So the Know Why series, it was a short essay. It was supplemented by a podcast, a video, images, and related social media content about some brief historical, archaeological, cultural, linguistic, literary, on and on and on. Basically, some insight in the Book of Mormon. And so this book is based on the first 137 Know Whys that were published during 2016. Each chapter is structured very similarly, and I think that there's a benefit there of knowing exactly what you're going to get. It makes it easily digestible. There's a no section, which is what is going on with one of these different truths that they're talking about, a why section, this is why it's relevant or important, and a further reading section. So if you're like, oh, that's interesting, I want to get a little bit more out of there, I'd like to know. For example, number 72, oh, isn't this convenient? I literally just opened it up to say, okay, what's the first one that I find? Why are horses mentioned in the Book of Mormon? Brian, you haven't heard that one, have you? Like, that's new to you, right?
There's horses mentioned in the Book of Mormon?
Go figure. And actually, this is one of the ones, as I'm looking at it right now, it is multiple pages because there's a lot to talk about here. But they reference one of the scriptures that mentions horses, and it came to pass that the people of Nephi did till the land and raise all manner of grain and of fruit and of flocks of herds and also many horses. Enos 1:21, which is a criticism that the Book of Mormon has received as far as horses being in Western American, it might not be the case. Well, what they do in the book is they try and get into, here's some of the information behind why this might have been there. Here's some further reading as to where you can go after that. And it makes it easily digestible. I really think that this book is probably perfect for someone like your dad, who really loves his subscription to the Interpreter. Maybe your dad's like a gospel doctrine teacher who loves getting into some of the nitty-gritty details behind the Book of Mormon. This is definitely for him. Just a nice little nod. Again, I'll show it here on the camera for those of you who are watching us on the live stream. There is a picture right here of Joseph Smith with his a hat in his hands, acting like he is looking into the hat. Very interesting, a nod to the Joseph looking at the seer stones. A couple of things that I would like an index to the book. That would be really nice, just so I could quickly go to the back and say, okay, here's one of the topics that I was looking at. It's not there, sadly, but the back of the book is basically just chock full of footnotes and endnotes. So if you're the type of person who loves going on those dives, those are in there as well. If you're looking for me to debate the merits of the book, I'm really not going to be able to do that. There are five very qualified editors with this, but these are also going to be editors who are going to be sympathetic towards the LDS Church and the Book of Mormon. I know Stephen really well. Stephen's a great friend of the show, and I think that he would fully support me saying that he is definitely someone who is a defender of the Book of Mormon and feels very passionately about the Book of Mormon. This book also feels very commercial, and I don't know if that's a bad thing, because I think when you're talking about some of the meaty subjects that they're getting into with this book, when it comes to things like archaeological records, that's not a bad thing to make it a little more presentable for the everyday audience. But I also don't know if this would be a book that would directly appeal to someone who might have some, how would I phrase it, some of the more common critiques or concerns with the Book of Mormon. It does address some of those, so there's that, but I would say that they're probably looking for something a little bit different. All in all, it's a very interesting book. You can find it on the Book of Mormon Central website. You can probably find it at Deseret Book. BYU Bookstore most likely has it as well, and you can find it online at Amazon. So this is Knowing Why, 137 Reasons That the Book of Mormon is True.
So continuing with talking about books, the next scheduled release from Greg Cofert Books, which is tied into sponsoring our show, is Whom Say Ye That I Am? Lessons from the Jesus of Nazareth by James and Judith McConkie. This book looks at the historical Jesus in his social and cultural setting and contrasts his interactions with individuals and with institutions. This book is getting a lot of buzz early on, so check it out at gregcofert.com. It's coming out on the 30th. I know there's going to be a few book release events for those who are in the Utah area on the 30th of January, the day of its release. There'll be an event at Written Vision in Provo where the authors will be speaking in a roundtable discussion. From what I understand, David Bakavoy will be joining them, and a few others will be discussing the historical Jesus. And on the 31st, they're going to be at Benchmark Books in Salt Lake City. So be sure to check that out if you're more in the Salt Lake City area. I believe that they're also going to have a forthcoming event at Weller's Bookworks as well, probably later in February. So definitely a great book coming out from them. And for those listeners of our show, Greg Cofert Books offers you 15% off of all books from their website, gregcofert.com. All you have to do is enter the word news report, which is all one word and all caps, into the discount code box at checkout to receive your 15% off. Orders over $50 qualify for free shipping to domestic customers, but those in the local Utah area and the Wasatch Front area are also welcome to stop by the Greg Cofert Books office to pick up their order. They do ask that you place the order online first, and then they've got a little selection boxes to shipping, and one of them is I'll come by to the office to pick it up. So you would just select that. So remember, GregCofert.com, that's GregCofford.com. Get your 15% discount by entering in news report, all one word, all caps, into the discount box at checkout.
And Brian, if I'm not mistaken, James and Judith McConkie, one or both of them are going to be future guests on the Mormon News Report podcast. Is that right?
Yes, we're going to have them on here to talk about their book as well.
Very cool.
So look forward to that. I think it'll be coming in first week of February.
And now for your moment in history, courtesy of our friends at todayinmormonhistory.com. Today is a double shot of Mormon history. First, from 5 years ago this week, on January 11th, 2013, the Let Women Pray campaign launches. This campaign encouraged individuals to write letters to general authorities asking them to schedule a woman to pray in general conference. Amazing that that was 5 years ago.
I can't believe it was 5 years ago.
130 years ago this week, on January 10th, 1888, Delegate John T. Kane presented the Constitution of the proposed state of Utah with a memorial asking for admission into the Union in the U.S. Congress. The measure met with much opposition in the House and was bitterly opposed by George F. Edmonds in the Senate.
I can't believe that was just 130 years ago.
Isn't it amazing? Brian, listen, time flies when you're having fun.
But hey, listen, just to be a little bit historically accurate here, that wasn't the only time that we had proposed a constitution to the United States. I mean, we had done it over and over again, and every time it got shot down because of a little thing called polygamy, which they just couldn't get over. But even in 1888, they were still not letting us in. But we had been, I mean, all the way through the Civil War, pre-Civil War, we'd been trying to gain admission to the state practically since the Saints arrived here. They started writing up a constitution to try to gain admission into the state. So, but that was kind of the final straw that broke the camel's back before Woodruff was saying, yeah, maybe we need to rethink this policy that we have on polygamy.
Well, and the crazy thing was, about 15 years later, then they start going through the process of trying to seat Reed Smoot as a senator from Utah, which, by the way, you want to talk about a fun, interesting time in Mormon history. That's one of my favorites, because you've got situations like, you've got the president of the LDS Church being subjected to congressional testimony because they're talking about trying to seat a Mormon senator. It is a fascinating time, and we'll probably get to it in the next couple of weeks. And folks, that is our show. This show is brought to you by the Cultural Hall Podcast. Be sure to check out the rest of the shows available at theculturalhall.com. They do articles and news, they do interviews, and the Mormon News Report podcast is on there as well.
And just to update you on our iTunes reviews and Patreon reviews, guys, you pulled through for us this last week. We got 3 new reviews. We're up to 15 now. We truly appreciate it. We love reading them. You guys are saying some really nice things about us. It's really just warming the curmudgeonly cockles of both Brant and I's heart. Every time that you guys post a review for us, I'm going to buy a box of Jell-O for Brant that he can that he can put towards his dream of bathing in Jell-O. So just know that if you want Brant to bathe in a tub full of Jell-O, pour those reviews in, because every time you get a review, I'm going to the store and I'm buying him some. And I'm not going to go for the cheap stuff either. I'm going to go for like Jell-O brand, lime Jell-O, cherry Jell-O, whatever it is that Brant prefers. But really, folks, our goal is 20 reviews. We're getting really close at 15. 5 more reviews to go to get us to our goal, where we know that we start hitting some of those aggregators, and that when people search the word Mormon, that they'll find us when they're in iTunes. So please, if you're thinking about pulling the trigger this week, if you're like, I really like these guys, I owe it to them, I should really write them up a review. Doesn't have to be long, just a few sentences, and then just hit done, and you're good. Then it would get us to that goal, and we really appreciate it. Then we'll shut up. Also, we gained a new patron this week. He's took the $2 pledge per month, and so we are up to $30 per month right now. Thank you very much to all of you patrons. It helps pay for our software that we use to record this program, and we also have a goal of getting us on Facebook Live on Sunday evenings. So we'd like to continue working towards that. So guys, it's, here's the cool thing about Patreon. If you sign up as a Patreon supporter, they give you your own unique URL. And I actually checked it out this week. I'm kind of tech savvy, but I'm not the most tech savvy. You get your own unique URL that you can add into whatever podcast app that you use. Like, for instance, me, I use just the Apple podcast app because I'm lame and because I'm too, I'm too ignorant to go out there and shop for other podcast apps. So I just use whatever's on my iPhone. And I went in there and I hit add new podcast. And one of the selections in there was add podcast by URL. So I was able to just plug in the URL that I got from our Patreon page, and it just populated it right away. I was able to get our regular shows, and then right after that, I was able to get our extended sessions all in one feed. So, you'd be driving along, listen to the regular show, and you'd be like, that was great. Well, right after that, you're going to get the extended session. And that's only available to our Patreon subscribers. It's super easy and it's super fun. Just visit patreon.com/Mormon News Report and pledge at least $1, and you'll get your unique URL that you can follow us on.
And as always, if you'd like to reach out to us directly, you can email us, mail@MormonNewsReport.com. Find us on Twitter @TheMormonNews. Hit us up on Facebook. Just search for Mormon News Report. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, give me a call, 801-987-0192. If the take is hot enough, when I say hot, I mean sizzling, We'll play it on the air next week, just like Rob from Zion, Utah, which is going to be how I'm going to describe it. So where are you from? Zion, Utah. We'll be back next week with more news, commentary, and interviews with a little bit of snark, and hopefully I will have a better voice and not be as sick next week. Until then, we'll talk to you again after a while.